The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, we are live, ladies and gentlemen. This is the UFC Fight Island 7 Holloway versus Cater post-fight show here on the MMAfighting.com YouTube channel. I am Mike Heck. We have lots to discuss. We're going to give you guys and gals who are watching right now the opportunity to lead the way, so to speak, ask all the questions, and myself, Casey Lydon, and our very special guest, Laura Senko, who is here. We're going to be answering all your questions. Laura, great to have you here. How are you?
It's good to be here. I'm excited, man. I'm worn out. I'm not going to lie. I'm worn out from this weekend. I'm worn out from that amazing fight. Had me on the edge of my seat the entire time. Incredible night, and I'm excited to get into the questions about it.
There you go. Before we get into the questions and get into what happened this afternoon, kudos to you for your commentary role last night. You did a phenomenal job. LFA, you and Alan Joban did an incredible job. What was that like for you? I know it was something that, you know, you didn't think was going to happen probably like 4 or 5 days beforehand, but you stepped in, you did phenomenal. How was it for you?
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to happen 24 hours beforehand. I got that call super late. It was amazing. You know, I, as many people or anybody who follows me on social media knows, that's my dream. That's my goal, to eventually be able to do that on the biggest stage possible. So to be able to do that for the LFA was really exciting. And I'll be honest, you know, I've called fights for Invicta a number of times now, but that's like a safe place for me, right? That's my home. And I feel like I have a good rapport with the fans there. So it's not as you don't feel like you're putting yourself out there quite as much, but to go to a new organization that's obviously less familiar with me and to be calling men's fights finally, right? It was pretty cool. And I felt like Alan and I really had our stride, and it was just an awesome experience to do.
Yes, you did a great job, and hopefully we could see more of that. But let's get to the questions, Casey, because we've been talking about this for a while we were waiting for Dana White to get up there. So there's a lot that came out of this afternoon's historic broadcast for the UFC on ABC. So let's hear what the peeps have to say about this.
And
Scott Crate agreed. Great broadcast for LFA. Awesome. You and Alan were fantastic. There you go.
All right, here we go. Questions.
We had some good fights to talk about that, so that definitely helps. We had a ton of finishes, so really the kudos to the fighters for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So wait, who were you in the by the cage doing color commentary or?
Yeah, I was doing color commentary right alongside Alan Joban. They had a 3-person booth for the first time, so it was really cool.
That's awesome.
Just to be able to get that flow and kind of show, you know. The world does not melt when a woman discusses a man fighting.
Yeah.
It's weird.
No, congratulations, Sarah. Laura. I don't know why it's taking so long to have a lady give color commentary to men fighting. I thought it's the weirdest thing, but I'm happy for it. That's exciting. You were great, you know? So, yay.
Thank you.
All right, now back to these UFC fights.
Let's see. Charles Strello Laura Sanko, is Max Holloway officially the greatest featherweight in UFC history after this his performance against Calvin Kattar?
I think you have to give him that. I think he had a reason to be called that before this. You know, the way that he obviously would have said it was Jose Aldo before that, right? But the way that he was able to handle Jose Aldo on two occasions, and then just I was thinking about tonight was, and he mentioned it a couple times in the post fight press conference, his journey to that first title shot is unparalleled, I think, at least in that division. That guy has earned every iota of success that he's had. And it's interesting to call someone the greatest of all time after dropping two fights to the champ, right? But given his run up to the title, given his title reign, unless Alex Volkanovski is able to hang on to that title for an even longer period, which is possible, he might go on and do that. But right now, yeah, I'm comfortable saying that Max Holloway is the best featherweight.
What do you think, Casey? I don't think we ever got your take on this. We know our colleague Jed Meshew's take on this. He thinks it's Jose Aldo all day. I could see the argument. Laura makes a great point. When you have two guys who are vying for that spot and one guy beats the other guy twice, you know, I can understand why some people would say Max Holloway, but I could also understand why some folks would say Jose Aldo, because people look at title defenses like it's everything as opposed to other stuff. So where would you put Max in there? Is he number one? Is he 1B? Is he number two? Where do you put him?
I give it a 1A, 1B type thing of him and Aldo, essentially. I mean, now, if Aldo would have just, you know, lost his title fights to Max and kind of, you know, generally just kind of not faded away into obscurity, but, you know, all of a sudden he's a number 5 featherweight. All of a sudden he's number 10 featherweight, mm-hmm. You know, like that. But him somehow, like, against all logic, went down a weight class and he's a top, at worst, a top 5 bantamweight right now. So that kind of changes things a bit in terms of pound for pound, just a great fighter. So Aldo's like career is kind of, it's hard because they're kind of doing two different things right now. But yeah, but suggesting Max Holloway is anything worse than the second best featherweight ever is ridiculous. It's either him or Aldo right now. That's about it. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. It's absurd to put him outside of the top two. I would agree with that. So,
I know I don't want to get into this whole cross promotion thing, but man, I wish we had Pitbull somehow. Bellator Sport. Yeah, just to throw him in there. You know, it's like, all these promoters and don't let him fight. This is like, yeah, this is awesome. Yeah, you know what I'm saying. But let's focus on tonight's card. Sorry.
maybe if we get MMA in the Olympics, then maybe. We can all have these weird dreams come true where people from other promotions fight each other. I don't know.
I like it. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate the question.
I have to be amateur. What am I talking about?
Well, you know, maybe there'll be like I was going to say World Series of Fighting, but never mind. Forget that I'm even saying it. No. I'm not even here.
Sorry, I lost my comment. I had a comment I wanted to read. All these comments are coming in too fast. All right, here we go.
All right, I am not going to answer this question because me and AK will talk about that on to the next one. What is next for Calvin Kattar? Laura, I'll ask you that question.
I wouldn't mind seeing him maybe a rematch with – it was Zabit that beat him, right, in most recently?
In November of 2019, yep.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing them run it back. It's so hard, like, to right after these fights to immediately. I understand Dana's like constant like stop trying to make matchmake on the night of fights. But that is, you know, that's the next logical question. I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch there. I mean, we've got everybody kind of a little bit tied up. I'm trying to remember who else. Obviously, they announced tonight that Alex and Ortega, Yair might be an interesting fight. Although I think he might be out for a little bit here. I don't know. What do you think, Casey?
Hey, taking away any actual damage he took, because I mean, we can probably talk about it later, how much damage Kattar took tonight. Because yeah. that's a whole other issue that I think has a fighter and just someone who cares about the safety of fighters. That was a lot of damage that Calvin Kattar took tonight. But assuming he has a little headache, he's good in the morning. man, what's up with Josh Emmett? Is he how long is he injured for? Is he, or he's been out for a while.
I mean, he tore like every.
This is why I need to have my Google.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's so funny. We watch all these fights, and you tell me name a fighter. I'm like, I can't name a single fighter. I don't know of any. I don't know. Just
Emmett had a lot of injuries coming out of that Shane Burgos fight. He like tore his ACL, did, yes. MCL, a whole bunch of stuff. So I would say, like, best case scenario, we see him in the summertime.
Yeah. You know what? Is it Chan Sung Jung that's also up there?
Yeah, he's coming off a loss to Ortega and recently. So he lost.
That's right. That's so I could see a zombie cater fight. That'd be pretty cool. Honestly, when I was watching this, because Ortega had such a superlative performance and Max had such a superlative performance, I kept thinking, man, I would not hate. And I realize he's pretty booked. I'm just, you know, talking about my weird end here. But I wouldn't hate seeing that fight again either, because I feel like, I don't know, I felt like Ortega was a completely different fighter. Now, Max just upped the level yet again, but I wouldn't hate that rematch at some point. I realize it's not, you know, coming down the pipe right away.
Yeah. I think for Cater, he just needs some... I would think at least 3 months out of the gym after a beating like that. And you know, and by that time rolls around, things change. Volkanovski, Ortega would have already happened by then, or around that time. About the exact fight scheduled for March sometime, right?
March 27th.
Yeah. So, I think Cater just needs some rest. And I think about 3 months, we'll probably throw his name back out there and see how see what's going on. But man. Good thing. I'm happy he has an extra 50K though. That's going to be somewhat nice.
Sure.
Yeah.
Jeremiah likes the idea of Arnold Allen. I don't dislike that idea at all. That would be a lot of fun. Arnold Allen's been trying to get a big fight for a while. And you know, Calvin Kattar, if they offered him Arnold Allen or Casey Lydon or anybody outside of the top 15, he's taking it. He's putting his pen to paper. It doesn't matter who it is. He's fighting him. So I think he's got a lot of options, and it's good when you have a guy like that, but hopefully he can take some time and heal up. But that he's the toughest man in the world. Like after that, I just don't know how he stayed on his feet. Like, it's one thing staying in the fight, but it's another thing like staying on his feet that entire time. Like, I think Matt always said, I had him doing the Mr. Robot during the post-fight press conference different times. So God, what a performance. And Cater's all time tough for sure.
I want to say real quick, when Max was talking about, you know, giving that beating to Cater, how he just wouldn't go down, and Max was thinking, man, I am so tired. I think, man, Max has a great poker face, because he never looks tired in there.
He never looks tired. I thought the exact same thing.
I don't get that. Like, after, like, I hit mitts for, like, 30 seconds, I'm like, oh. I mean, I'm still hitting it, but I can't hide that tired. And I see these guys, guys like Max, who are, like, inside, their heart's going, like, 180 a minute. You know, and they're just dying inside, but outside they're barely sweating. They're just, you know, pop, pop, pop. I don't get it.
Yeah. His pace didn't take at all. No. I mean, even the guys who come out and guys we refer to as volume punchers, Tony Ferguson, great example. Tony Ferguson is a great volume puncher, but Tony, you know, like most normal human beings, slows down a little bit in those later rounds. And just to see Max do what he did, it was just, man, that guy, I don't know how he trains. I don't know how he does what he does without having any sparring. It's crazy.
You know, yeah, that's when you talk about Max and his fighting abilities, like, it defies kind of basic fight logic a lot of times. Do you think so, Sarah?
Yeah.
Sarah, Laura, I don't want to keep Laura.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just doesn't
it's
make
good.
It doesn't
I'll
make
to any name, Casey.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm calling you Sarah Sanko. Sarah's like, I'm just like
my alter ego.
Yeah. I'm like drunk. I'm fighting right now.
Same. No, yeah, it does defy logic. I think a lot of the things that he did in this fight tonight defy logic, because it's one thing. Is my signal okay now? Like, am I connecting okay now?
You know, your audio is fine, so don't worry if you're going choppy. As long as we're hearing you fine.
All right. It's weird because my signal says I'm like full strength, so I'm not sure what the issue is. But what really hit me when I was thinking about and just kind of digesting the fight, it's one thing. I mean, we could be sitting here talking about the superlative performance just on the volume and pace alone, but there are so many other layers that we could also be talking about. If we just talked about his creativity, so that to have the creativity, the variety of weapons, the viciousness, the showmanship, all within that context of an absolutely insane pace, sustained insane pace, you just don't see that. Like, it's one thing to be creative when you're throwing a couple of shots at a time, and like you can kind of sit there and think like, oh, I'm going to throw this 360 kick and then I'm going to do something really cool on the end of it. You've got time to digest it, set it up, go execute it. And then there's kind of that reset moment. Max never has a reset moment. And I think it's really what makes a lot of his opponents fall apart, because then that means they never have a reset moment either. And I'm telling you, you can't find training partners to replicate that. You can't, you don't get that in the gym unless you're training with Max Holloway. I just can't imagine how you'd ever prepare for that level of creativity within that pace. Is just second to none.
Yeah.
Russ's defense and the durability, because Calvin hit him with some big shots. Shots. That uppercut, a couple of uppercuts landed super clean, and Max just ate him like a turkey sandwich. Like, it was nothing.
Yes.
It's amazing.
It really is. And I mean, we all know Max is tough. But it's like every time I watch the fight, I'm just reminded of how tough he is, because you're exactly right, Mike. That uppercut, that's the one that really stuck in my head. And I think I tweeted out back at that point in the fight, like, you know, Holloway, great performance, but Cater having some moments, and people are like, oh, this is a massacre. It was, but like, I'm telling you, Cater had bad intentions on some of those shots. Yeah. And he was connecting with some of those big shots. And that guy has got so much power in his hands, which is what, even though it was just an incredibly one-sided dominant performance with a guy like Calvin Cater and power like that and accuracy like that, I was still on the edge of my seat all the way to the bell, to be honest with you, because you just never know. And Calvin could have pulled it off, but I hope we end up having a little bit of discussion about, you know, thoughts on should the fight have been stopped, all that type of stuff, because it's an interesting one, and it's one that has really evolved for me personally, as, you know, I'm tight with Anthony Smith, and like, have seen some of these other fights where we just end up having that discussion afterwards, you know. And I think it's one that needs to be had, because it keeps it in the forefront of people's minds. I'm not saying it should happen tonight, but it's worth discussing, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Casey and I were talking about this, and I think it comes on the heels of our colleague Steve Morocco's article about Spencer Fisher that we dropped earlier this week, that is just absolutely unbelievable. Yes. If you haven't checked it out, highly recommend you do so. Yeah, I think it broke everybody's heart. But there's one thing that was so fascinating about Calvin Cater, because I saw everybody on Twitter saying, listen, Tyson and the team, they need to think about stopping this fight. End of the fourth round, after eating 81 significant strikes, Calvin Cater is sitting there with his back against the cage, a bloody mess. Horn blows. Cater just smiles at Max Holloway and says, good stuff, man. Gives him like a high five and walks back to his corner. And Tyson Chartier is asking him all these questions and giving him advice. And Calvin's answering him clear as a bell. Mm-hmm. There's like nothing concerning. Like, if you just turned the television on and saw that exchange between Tyson Chartier and Calvin Cater, you would have never thought he got hit 81 times 30 seconds ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did you see what Max looked like at the post press conference? It looked like Max lost the fight just by the bruising on his face. But like, that's the guy that landed like 2,000 strikes, which means that Calvin hit him with, you know, at least hit him with a significant amount of strikes. And I don't get it, dude. I don't get it.
It's a wild sport. Yeah.
They're both just next level humans. That's for sure.
Do you think?
Go. I'm sorry.
Heart of hearts, Laura. Do you think they should have stopped it earlier?
No, I don't. But I do think I understand, and I think it's valid, and I actually think it's important. I'll go beyond valid. So I think it's important that it was, at least the topic was broached. That's the thing, right? Like, at some point, I remember when Duke Rufus stopped the fight for Anthony Pettis. You know, that's the one that really sticks out in my head. I know there are other examples I can think of, but I do think the most important stride that can be made is to make it less or more socially acceptable, to where if you get your fight stopped, you know, you're not automatically a pussy and you're not thinking about firing your coaches because how dare you do that? You know, I had long conversations with both Anthony Smith and his corners after that fight. And it was fascinating because Anthony's old school, right? Like, he was legitimately angry that topic even came up. And he was honestly mad at his corners for, I guess, being sensitive to the feedback that they got after the fight. You know, Mark and James were not loving that conversation, understandably. And Anthony's like, I don't know what the problem is, you know, get over it. So people didn't like what you guys, you know. It's fascinating to hear the mindset of someone who, you know, he said, I've had this conversation with Mark where, like, I will never train with you again if you ever stop a fight. It will break my trust in you, right? And I do think that ultimately it's the referee's job to keep the fighter safe. That's the biggest thing. That is what their job is. And the coach's job is to help the fighter figure out a way to win. Now, secondary to that, fighter safety is part of a coach's job, but it's not his primary job. It's the referee's primary job. So I think, and the ref is literally in the fight, right? Literally seeing this, hearing this. So I put a little bit more onus on them.
And this goes back to just how crazy tough Cater is. As much as I wanted that fight stopped, and as soon as I'd be like, oh, if I should be stopped, then I see Cater throw this wild hook that Max has to get out of the way of. It's not like he just throws it. Max is, like, he's there. You know, there was an elbow. Like, those, like, Cater's still in the fight. He's still in the moment. He's not just, you know, blind. That's what made it. That's why I understand Herb Dean was in a very difficult position. Was that Herb Dean? Was he the main event ref? Yeah. Sorry. Yes. That's what made him, that's why it was such a difficult position. And as long as Calvin's head wasn't really bouncing a lot, it seemed like his legs only went out just momentarily in 25 minutes, maybe a couple of seconds.
Body language is a big piece of it. And that's why I was actually fine that Anthony's fight didn't get stopped either. People made a big deal out of it, but, like, the shots that he was taking on the ground for the most part were somewhat peppering. You know, he's on the ground. They weren't like massive shots. The fight that honestly I think has the biggest argument, at least in my mind, was the Ferguson Gaethje fight, because Tony was essentially, like, you could see in his face that he wasn't there. Right. You know, he was making movements and he wasn't, like, just wobbling all over the place like he was drunk, but you could see the expression on his face. He was somewhere else. And he was defending and moving, but he wasn't defending in a way that we know Tony's capable of defending. I would argue that Calvin, while he was getting tagged up relentlessly, I kept seeing moments where he was weaving and he was putting his hands in the proper position, and then he'd fire back with an elbow, or, like you say, he'd fire back with a shot. To me, that's very intelligent defense. So I kept being on the cusp of having that thought, like, oh, maybe they should. And I'd be like, no, maybe they should. No, he looks, no, I think he's okay. And then, as you say, Mike, in between rounds, clear as a bell, answering questions. That's a big piece of it. So I'm not upset that it wasn't stopped.
I would also point out, in such a high stakes fight for Calvin and Max, if this was just an amateur fight or a regional fight or guys, or just the early fights on the prelims, I think the ref can be a little more aggressive in stopping the fight. But I think these guys, like Calvin Cater, I think you understand this. Like, he has earned the opportunity to get his ass kicked like that. And because it takes years to get to that point, to get your ass kicked in a main event on national TV. I know that sounds weird, but I think you know what I mean, Laura. Like,
I do.
Yeah, it's like that. He's earned that right to get his butt kicked. So I think in the end of the day, I think Herb Dean actually did a fine job. And it was, it hurts. It kind of hurts your heart a little bit, but I think the right decision was made by all involved.
Yeah, I agree.
I would agree. And by the way, I do want to say one thing. I thought Dan Hardy on the broadcast today was awesome. Like he was an A plus on the broadcast. And I thought he made such a great point in the first round. He's like, Calvin's normally a slow starter, but you cannot let, and I thought the analogy was great. Like if you let Max get out to too big of a lead in the first round, it is almost impossible to play catch up. And he was so right. I'm sitting there listening to this. I'm like, I don't know. It's just one round. But as you saw that first round unfold going into the second, I even tweeted, I'm like, all right, this round went kind of the way I expected it to, but Cater's a second round guy. Like once second round comes, that's like Cater's first round. But Dan Hardy was so right. He was so right. Cause it just got worse for Calvin after that.
I wondered too, if Calvin wasn't slightly taken by surprise by Max's immediate pace, because a lot of times we see Max come out round one and be very patient, very calculated, almost like he's kind of taking it all in. He's still, I say that, and he probably still lands, you know, four strikes a minute, which if you average out the UFC is still a pretty high rate, but it's low for him is my point. You know, he's a little bit more calculated and more patient often in that first round. And in the second round, sometimes you can see a huge flip the script. And he comes out and he fights like we saw him tonight. Tonight, he came out and he had that volume and he had that pressure right from the bell. So I don't know if it was just Max feeling himself or Max feeling like he had Calvin's number. But I wonder if Calvin didn't have half a second of going, oh, whoa, I was not prepared for this. I was prepared to have at least a sort of patient first round where we could measure each other up and I could find my distance. I could find my rhythm, because literally from the first few seconds of that fight, you could tell that Calvin just hadn't settled in and Max was already like in his groove and flowing out there. And then it just, as you say, the fight got away from Calvin within the first minute of the fight.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Dan Hardy was unbelievable today, and to see him like standing on his feet doing the broadcast was even cooler. Yeah. Like just pacing around like in his little space on his feet the whole time.
They need like a longer cord for Dan so he can, you know, have a nice length.
You should be able to, come on, get some wireless headphones. Yeah, have him just walk around. Yeah, just he's in the locker room watching. He's walking out with them right next to them. Oh, he's got the look in his eyes. Yeah, I can see it. He's got
he's like on top of the
office. Yeah, he's pushing Herb Dean out of the way. Oh, yeah. I thought tonight's booth was great. I thought Anik DC and Hardy worked well together tonight. That's not a normal combination, right?
No, I was actually trying to think if I've ever seen Hardy and DC work together, and I can't say it's never happened, but not that I could remember. And it's a great mix because Dan has such a level of detail in his analysis that I personally really enjoy, and DC brings such great, he does detail as well. Obviously he quite literally does detail. But he often in fights does a great job of really painting the big picture. He brings the humor. He brings the personality. I freaking love it whenever he says big biscuits. That's my new favorite thing in the whole world. These big biscuits out here.
Hey, I thought those big biscuits were fight of the night, to be honest. So
yeah, it was a fun one. It was a really fun one.
That was a fun one.
Well, apparently there were other fights on the card too, so we might want to, I guess we'll go.
Yes.
The mother fight. All right, let's here we go.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. so you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Oh, that's really small. Can you read that? Right. Hold on.
Let's see.
Oh, wait. Oh, man. This...
I can do it.
Sorry,
I'm moving it.
Sorry. Yeah. I know my fault.
Is Li Jingliang that good of a fighter, or is it a case that he got lucky versus Santiago Ponzinibbio? Ponzi took off 26 months due to a health scare. We could have been talking about him as the welterweight champion. So I guess the question is, Laura, was this a case of really good timing for Li Jingliang, or is he as good as we saw tonight?
Oh, I think he is as good as we saw tonight, but I do. Listen, there's not a lot of a fight that we got to see, so it's hard to kind of analyze whether ring rust really was a factor for Ponzinibbio or not. But I tend to think it was. He was maybe a little bit explosively aggressive than we've seen him in the past, but you can't take away from Li Jingliang. That was a perfectly placed punch. And it's I always root for these comeback stories. I'm a fan of the Leech. You know, it's not like I wanted him to lose, but I always love rooting for the guy who's trying to scrape his way back. So I was, it's sad to see Ponzinibbio on the canvas like that, but I know he'll be back. He's an incredible fighter. And as you know, as Joseph Boza said, we easily could have been talking about him in that welterweight contention title. He was on a heck of a streak, and just unfortunate circumstances kept him away for a really long time. But I have no doubt he'll be back and doing big things quickly enough.
Casey, we don't like to talk. I mean, sometimes you do. Us positive thinkers like to do this, but moral victories are hard to find in mixed martial arts, aren't they? And I feel like Ponzinibbio, and our own Guillermo Cruz wrote an incredible story from a conversation he had with Santiago Ponzinibbio heading into the fight. But him just getting back and looking as good as he did, the shape he was in. I mean, this is a guy, after losing all of that weight, was actually thinking about dropping to 155 because he lost so much muscle mass due to the illnesses. Mm-hmm. So just the fact that he got back in here and was on this historic card, although it sucks that he lost, he got finished in the first round. Is that like, can you take at least that with you? Is that a moral victory?
I do as a fan. I don't think he's going to.
Right.
At all. You know, it's kind of like Walt Harris. You know, that was just Walt making the walk when he did back in May. You know, those first few fights back was, oh my God, talk about emotional, you know. And then you want the story to end a certain way, right? You want this fairy tale ending for Walt, given everything that he had been through. So you're right. I as a fan, like I'm happy that they were able to get back to the point where they could even enter the octagon. But as fighters, entering the octagon is not what we're here for. It's not what we're there for, you know, and you're never, I don't know. I don't think fighters take moral victories very often. But as a fan, right. I see it. Yeah.
It was a crappy loss for Ponzinibbio, but I don't think it was the worst loss when he looks back on it, because it wasn't like he was dominated 15 minutes. And, I mean, that punch honestly landed, like he was, I think it was that left hook, and he had his arm up, and it just kind of either came around his guard, but it just hit that perfect spot right in the tip of the chin. Like if that hits on the cheek, on the forehead, it hurts, you know, but.
Yeah.
It doesn't take very much right on that tip of the chin. So it's just one of the, I don't want to call it a lucky shot, because there's no such thing at this level, a lucky punch, but
it was a perfect punch. And it was
a perfect
one,
punch. Yeah.
One shot. Yeah.
So, and again, he didn't go out cold. Was he arguing the stoppage?
A little bit. Yeah.
So,
it was a good stoppage.
No, it was a fine stoppage, but yeah. All right.
And again, another great point Dan Hardy made, and I didn't even realize this. Li Jingliang is massive. He is a huge welterweight. Dan Hardy's like, look at the legs on this guy. And I was like, oh, I didn't even notice that his legs are bigger than, it's just massive.
This is going to sound weird, but like, his cranium is gigantic. Like, he has a giant head. Now, it fits his body. I'm not saying he's, like, some really disproportionate person, but, like, he's just a big guy. Very big.
How many fights is, does the Leech have in the UFC? Isn't, like, we talked about this on the preview show. Something crazy.
He's
like
a lot.
He has a lot.
Like 16 fights or something. Like, I'm like,
yes.
Like, I'm like, holy yeah. It's like, I think we said for by far, he has the most fights in the UFC for any Chinese fighter, easily. Mm-hmm. Not even close. So he is a very experienced fighter who knows? It just took him a while to hit that prime, to get in his stride. Like, he just got to the UFC when he was a good, you know, a decent fighter. Now he's a good fighter. Now he's on his way to becoming kind of that great fighter. Can he be in the elite? You know, so, you know, he took a giant step out. Took a giant step tonight. Yeah,
for sure.
As I said on the preview show, and I don't know if we're going to see this again. Anytime Li Jingliang enters a fight as a massive underdog, take a shot at him because he always comes through. Wes S., what is next for Carlos Condit? UFC, Bellator, PFL? Or is this the end of the road for the natural born killer? Yes, as he stated on his media day, this is the last fight of his UFC contract. So we will see what happens. But Casey, let me get your take on this, my friend. Do you see Carlos Condit said on his post-fight scrum, he hopes to re-sign with the UFC at some point. Not really sure what the price tag is, but he wants to come back. He's got two wins in a row. Do you think his next fight will be inside the octagon or will it be somewhere else?
Well, it's not the end of the road, that's for sure. There's still a lot of fight left in him. I was privileged enough for Carlos's, when he fought Court McGee, I was in Albuquerque at the time, so I got to watch him train and hit pads and just, dude, watching Carlos Condit hit pads for five or six rounds is it's beautiful. It's just, you know, Laura, like some guys are good strikers, but some people on the pads, you're just like, oh, wow.
Yes. It's like music.
Yeah, yeah. It just has a... and then, of course, I had to hit pads right after that, and it was just embarrassing. But let's not talk about that. But, I... As much as I love... competition, and I want to see fighters fight everywhere and, you know, find different promotions, I think Carlos Condit is a UFC fighter, and I hope he can come to terms and get the proper, you know, whatever he wants to get paid. I hope him and Dana can come to an agreement. And I would like for him to stay in the UFC. And I'd like to finish his career in the UFC. And I still think he has a good run still left in him.
Agree. I thought he looked great tonight. You know, I thought that the analysis was spot on. I've never seen him wrestle with that much flow, right? Mm-hmm. Where he was just, you know, he was hitting the switch and he was, you know, getting the reversals, and he looked really confident in his wrestling. He's always been a well-rounded fighter, but the wrestling in particular really seemed on point tonight, and it was a big factor in this fight. And in terms of what's next for him, I mean, I think Dan Hardy threw a couple names out there. Of course, the one I'm going to vote for is James Krause, because I think that would be a super fun fight. You know, even though they're of slightly different generations, they're not that far apart in terms of generations. And I like, you know, like the fight tonight. That's the type of fight I like. I want to see the fight that we were wanting to see forever. I want to see Carlos fight other guys from that generation of fighters. And while James is just a little bit younger than that, you know, he's right there. I wouldn't mind seeing him fight Dan Hardy, to be honest with you. I don't know if Dan is still hot for a comeback. Because he's so good in this broadcasting career. But if Dan makes a comeback, that would be a really fun rematch. And I don't know. I don't remember when their first fight was, but it was a long-ass time ago. And it'd be so cool to see those two scrap again.
Dude, that first fight was so close to a double knockout. Do you remember? It was in... I was there. I think it was in Manchester. It was in England. I was somewhere in England when I saw it. But no, it was London. It was in the 02. But yeah, it was... That was probably the closest moment I've seen the UFC to a double knockout.
Crazy. It's crazy. So I wouldn't mind seeing those two throw down again if Dan indeed is looking to get back in there. But I think Carlos will stay with the UFC. My prediction.
It feels right. You know, some guys, you know, you kind of want to see, you know, I want to see him fight in Japan, just a kind of different environment. But I think just because Carlos was so close to greatness in the UFC. Like, he was like, he almost knocked out GSP. Came so close knocking out GSP. Most people thought he beat Robbie Lawler in that amazing, amazing fight, you know? So it's like you just wanted to get that one more run. So
one more big moment. Yeah. Sure.
Maybe give him Lawler and they run that one back.
That'd be fun.
Ooh. You know
that'd
what?
That'd be fun.
Carlos did say, I saw in some interviews, he did say he wants to run back a lot of those losses. And Lawler was one of them.
Let's do it.
Lawler was one of them. I think Carlos is at that point in his career, like fights that maybe don't make ranking sense, but kind of makes fan sense. I don't know.
Yeah. Just bucket list. Just stuff you always wanted to do. I mean, that's, you earn it at that point.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
This question. Go on.
Yeah. Like, don't throw him in there with Miguel Baeza. Like, don't do that.
No. I don't care about that.
Exactly.
Listen to us.
Like, Crouch, I'm okay with. But yes, yeah. The rematch, the Legend Tour, that's what I want to see.
Cool.
Yeah.
This question is about the betting odds, but let's go ahead and just talk about this fight in general.
Were those some crazy betting odds in the Buckley fight? Yeah, we talked about this in the preview, though.
If I was allowed to put money on fights, I mean, and it's not, and I'm not here to hate on Joaquin Buckley because I actually think he's a good fighter, but there's just certain fighters that, like, the hype train take off down the tracks, and people who have followed someone's career for a long time are like, wait, like, he's good, but let's not let this train just completely steamroll everything. And if I was betting or allowed to bet, I would have put a ton of money on DeChirico because he's a solid fighter and he's been around the block. And again, I'm not here to hate on Walkley. Luckily, he's an incredible athlete and he's got a solid skill set, but the odds should not have been what they were.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I think we said I think when we did our previous show coming to this fight, I picked Jericho. And I was like, well, simply because this is the toughest Jericho. It's when he fights guys better than, it sounds silly, but when he fights guys better than him, he loses. I feel Kevin Holland is a better fighter. He lost to Kevin Holland. And Bellator, when Buckley was in Bellator, the guys he lost to, I feel, are just better. And the guys he's beaten, he's better than them. And I thought, comparing those wins and losses in his past, I thought Jericho was going to be in the better half. And that's what we saw tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought if Buckley was going to win, it was going to be a really close decision. Like, I thought it was going to get to the nitty gritty. I didn't think he was going to finish the fight by any stretch. But if Buckley were to win, it was going to be a gritty fight. It was going to be one that he was going to take a lot away from. But never know what's going to happen in this sport, friends. And DeChirico got it done. Nasty knockout. And then I thought the post-fight stuff was even better. He refuses to do an interview with him.
That was so strange. I felt for John in that moment. And I was putting myself in that position, like, oh, well, how would I tag that? How would I react to that? Like,
John's just like, congratulations, Alessio DeChirico, yay!
Yeah.
And then he goes to the back, and John Morgan asks him one question. He goes, I like the win, but I'm not doing this interview anymore because you should interview the losers too. I'm out of here, guys. 40 seconds. His whole scrum is 40 seconds.
Yeah. And apparently, I mean, you guys obviously listened to the post-fight, but Dana was saying that even when he came over to congratulate him, his whole team was like, you know, what the hell do you want? Like, I'm sorry, I'm just here to say good job, you know? Like, you had a great knockout tonight. It's a very interesting, I want to say it's like, it seems like his heart's in the right place. It's just a very, it's a strange hill to die on, I guess.
Yeah. I personally love interviewing losing fighters. And I just feel there's more story there. But not when they just got knocked out and got hit in the head very hard.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. I don't mind interviewing a losing fighter days after a loss. Even if they didn't get knocked out or pummeled too much. Just from an ease of like flow in an interview, I hate doing it because it's so hard to ask polite questions about, you know, a fight that they lost, unless it was really close, and then that's kind of a different story, I guess. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know. It was just a very strange hill to die on. That's all I'll say.
I think you might appreciate this story, Laura. So back in the Invicta days, when I was doing stuff for Invicta, and your fight, actually, it was one of the fights you were, your fight that you, who did you beat? What was her name?
Cassie Robb,
yeah. And so I was actually, remember it was like that big underground, where is it, Kansas City? But
the Memorial Hall.
Memorial Hall. So I was interviewing everyone backstage. And but I wanted to talk to some of the losers too, but like I was like, ooh, so I kind of put the camera down and I kind of went to the coaches first, like, do you think she's would like to talk about her loss? And they were like, well, you can ask her. And then I would ask, and you know, hey, do you want to talk about it? And like I think of all the 10 fighters that lost, 9 of them were like, yeah, I'll talk, you know, it's fine. Uh-huh. And I'm not gonna trash anyone, but there was one fighter I asked if when she lost the fight, and she looked at me and she's like, I don't want to fucking talk about it. I don't want to throw under the bus, but like,
now
I was
I'm
like,
dying to know who
yeah, I'll tell you later. I'll tell you later.
Okay.
I was like, but she looked, but it was like, she even looked in her eyes like, how dare you? I'm like, okay.
I think she won that night, but I so wish that the story was accidentally about Paige Van Zandt. She like had that, this alter ego where she was like, fuck, I don't want to fucking talk about it. But I'm sure she would never do that. And I actually think she won that night. I can't remember.
But yeah. Yeah. So talking to losing fighters is always from the us backstage is always a tricky thing because everyone's different. Every fighter is different. Yeah. Some fighters are like, yeah, I'll talk. Yeah. But other ones are like, yeah.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you. All right, here we go.
Was Carlos Felipe versus Justin Taffa a robbery, Laura Sanko?
I'm not prepared to call it a robbery, but maybe a pickpocketing?
A misdemeanor?
I think it was a pickpocketing. I did have Justin winning that fight, but yeah, I don't know that you can call it a robbery. That was just a great fight, and there were a lot of really close moments. So I can't. Normally, when I think about a robbery, I'm thinking like armed robbery, right? I'm drawing this analogy out way too much at this point, but I didn't see, there weren't moments I could point to and say, how could you argue that that was anything but just, you know, Carlos Felipe winning? So I did have Justin winning, but no, I wouldn't label it a robbery.
Casey, what do you think? Was this a robbery, or is this like someone saying, do you have $20 I can like have?
Oh man, robbery. So yeah, this wasn't a full on like assault team robbing a bank robbery. This is maybe more, you know, go to your local bodega and steal kombucha type of robbery. I don't know. Like, I'm not paying $4 for this.
A handful of Splenda packets. From
yeah,
the
rubber, yeah, yeah.
Bringing them back.
I like this dinner play. I'm like, it's that type of robbery. But this is actually one of those fights that I think. For fans, and like Laura, you'd understand this too, because we've seen so many fights cage side, how the what you see on TV often is a much better view than cage side. So maybe it's when there are close fights, sometimes you think shots land from where the judges are, but they actually don't land, or vice versa. Yeah. So I think when there are close fights like this, that you do have a better perspective at home than you do as a judge. So I'm gonna give it a little bit of leeway, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Taffa got hosed. He didn't get robbed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know the difference between the two, but I feel like hosed is just a little friendlier than robbed.
Okay, here we go. Let's talk about this one.
Oh boy.
I'm done talking about it, but.
BS announcement from Dana about the UFC lightweight championship. I mean, like I said, because I'm a positive guy, I'm like the corporate boss who gives bad news, but like tries to sandwich in like a piece of good news. The good news was I thought they built this up so brilliantly. Like the whole thing was great. like even from when they walked into the office and Dana like smiled and closed the door, like that whole thing. And then like the Instagram story where it's like Dana on one side and Habib on the other side. And then him doing the video saying 3 p.m., ladies and gentlemen, when this main card starts on ABC, the announcement comes and it's going to affect everything at UFC 257. You got my attention. You got it all. And then at 3:02, when there is no Dana, 3:03, no Dana, 3:04, no Dana. Then we're doing the promo for Puna Soriano versus Dusko Todorovic. And we see them walk down the aisle. Like I was immediately like, uh-oh, this is not going to be as cool as I thought it was going to be. Sure enough, it wasn't as cool as I thought it was going to be. Laura, what did you think? I know you're in a different position than we are, but
it wasn't quite as cool as I thought it would be, but it's kind of out of his control, right? I think he was fully anticipating a yes or no definitive conversation. And I'm going to spin it in a positive way as well. I don't hate it. I don't hate it because it's going to add this whole other level of intrigue when we watch that fight next weekend, because the co-main and main event, I think all of us in the back of our minds are going to be thinking, you know, was this enough to tease Habib out of retirement? Was, oh man, is this, you know, maybe Michael Chandler goes out there and does something just absolutely insane. Right. And I don't know, like or honestly, in a perfect world, Conor McGregor, not that I want Dustin Poirier to lose, cause I don't, but Conor McGregor does something magical again. And I'm not going to lie, that would get everybody going. It would get me going. The thought that, oh, now will Habib say yes to this? Because I think there's a part of Habib that's very principled. And I think there's a part of him that doesn't want to give Conor that experience again, that shine again. I genuinely think he doesn't have a lot of respect for him, perhaps. But then by the same token, I think Habib is at a point in his career where he also wants to entertain people, and he wants to put a capstone on his career, and to beat Conor again would be that capstone, and it would be a massive payday. So I don't mind it. I don't mind it. We've got an extra layer of intrigue as we watch the fights next weekend. So I don't hate it. I don't love it, but I don't hate it.
here's the thing. I actually left the door open for some positivity until Dana spoke at the post-fight presser and said that Habib wasn't going to be there. He'll be there Wednesday, but he's going back home after he corners somebody on Wednesday. If Habib was sitting next to Dana on Saturday at UFC 257 watching these fights unfold,
yeah,
I'm with you. I'm all in on it. I would be all in on it if Habib was there watching it and reacting to everything that happened in those two fights. You know what I mean? I actually, but just seeing that nothing had changed from October when he announced his retirement, it's kind of a letdown, Casey.
It sounds like they're going to meet again in Vegas. So then we have like another announcement to get all excited about. I don't know.
Announcement 2.5, Casey.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like that we're just doing the GSP thing again now. We're like every 3 months, GSP come in retirement. You know, it's just this thing. It was cute, the decision. Oh, the door's shut. What are they talking about? You know, it's cute. You know, actually, I do want to criticize something though.
No.
I want to criticize something, and this is actually a criticism on Habib. Why is he? I know he said he's retired, but has he just said I vacate the belt? Because Daniel's talking about not holding up the division. Well, one thing I admire about John Jones, when John Jones went to heavyweight, he vacated the belt immediately. He's like, okay, I'm done with this. And then if he decides to go back to 205, he'll have to fight as a challenger, I guess, for John Jones. For Habib, though, I don't understand why hasn't he officially vacated the belt.
Because he's not retired.
Oh,
he's
my
not
bad.
Retired. That's so, why. I think he's just going to decide, you know, if I think it's just literally a gut reaction. If he is moved by someone's performance and gets that fire lit in him as he's watching, then I think he's going to fight again. And if it's just sort of, if we see two decisions and two kind of back and forth fights, but more maybe, which I don't think this is going to happen. I don't know how it could happen, but with the people that we're talking about, but just in some parallel universe, if it's a somewhat boring decision type fight, then I do. I think he's going to vacate. I really do think it depends on the performances that we see on Saturday. And that was what he meant by not holding up the division. Like, in other words, I'm not going to drag it out past Saturday and past when he has this next conversation with Dana.
Yeah, I guess. I'm just like, either, I don't know. Habib, I've said you're the best. I think you're the GOAT, actually, and all that stuff. I'm like, but you left, dude. Like, let these gentlemen continue with the division and let them fight for the belt. And if you want to come back, challenge them. I don't know. I don't know. But I just wish, because more belt, I mean, if Dustin wins a belt, if Chandler wins a belt, whatever, like, all these fights are just going to be just, they make more money. And I want more financial freedom and financial security for these fighters at this level. So that's why I would like the belt available for these men. That's my only beef.
I wanted the Khabib Nurmagomedov Invitational lightweight tournament announced today, but it didn't happen. I was holding out hope. But it is what it is. We got like another week and a half of it, and then we'll have our decision, hopefully. How much money would you pay to see Dana and Khabib's meeting? Would you pay pay-per-view money?
A fun question. What would I pay
to put these two guys in a private,
whatever the pay-per-view is?
Oh, I would pay good money to see a lot of these meetings. I want to see Colby with Dana talking money. I would love to see the money talks between like those level fighters.
It would be fascinating for sure.
If they charge $19.95 for the dinner between Dana and Khabib in Las Vegas, would you pay it?
Yeah, if it was magically them not knowing that it was being filmed. Because like, if they know it's being filmed, then it turns into television, and then people are not being as real can be. But if it was somehow some magical world where they don't know they're being filmed, and I pay $20 to like get the secret tape, yeah, I'd probably pay for it.
Like we're the secret bus boy. We come in, like, we fill the waters, you know.
Yeah. Little camera in your bow tie.
Yeah. So basically, we want to become spies. That's what we're talking
about. Basically, yes. yes.
We are not recommending anybody do that. By the way. Thoughts on Stipe versus Francis announcement?
Exciting.
Is that official? Did Dana make it official?
He did. Yeah. Dana announced. Got it out. It was funny because in the post-fight press review, I can't remember who asked the question, but he said, "Yeah, it might have been Mike Bond, but he said, yeah, you got it out of me. Good job. It's official." So yeah, that's going to be March 27th as well. So that'll be an excellent card. And man, I love that fight. I think this is a very interesting test for Francis because level of Stipe's boxing, sophistication of the angle, the wrestling, like Stipe is a 55er who just happens to have a ginormous body. Like the way that he moves, his fight IQ, the things that he pulls off in there. Not to say that Francis hasn't been fighting excellent fighters, because he has, and all those guys that he's beaten have had some interesting tricks up their sleeves. But if you want to throw a blanket over the entire heavyweight division, it's quite often that, okay, we're looking for big shots, and that's mostly what, you know, we need to worry about. Or if you're fighting DC, you're not going to worry about the takedowns or whatnot. But this is a big test for Francis. I'm trying to think of the last, you know, massive horse tranquilizer type puncher that Stipe has faced. And Francis is just another level.
It's probably Francis, right?
Well,
sure.
I would say Overeem, and Overeem dropped Stipe, but that's, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
And DC, but he learned his lesson.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. Yeah. And I mean, if you watch that fight, yeah, Stipe dominated rounds 4 through 5. But man, rewatch round 1. That first 3 minutes when Francis put a beating on Stipe. Let's see if
I feel like Francis is a different fighter right now. He's grown tremendously because he was so green when he got in and started doing big things. So I think that that could play out very differently, but Stipe's got some very nuanced skills for a heavyweight.
Absolutely.
Casey, I don't know if you know this, but that night, UFC 220 at the TD Garden in Boston, you and I, we watched that fight in the same room together. Did you know that?
I figure we were there. So we were in the back watching the fight?
We're in the back in the Legends, in the Legends place.
Oh, okay.
And we're all in the same boat, like watching that first round and then just seeing like how intense it was. Mm-hmm. Like it was the quietest I've ever seen a media room through those first 5 minutes of that fight. Everyone was just like waiting for every shot Francis threw. We're like, ooh.
Mm, yeah.
And then Stipe survived it. But I like the fight. I think it's super interesting. Francis is obviously a different guy, but the Stipe we saw against DC last year, all ripped up, like the cool guy haircut.
Yeah.
He's a little more personable now. He just seems like a more comfortable guy. You know what I mean? He just seems like a different cat than he was probably for that first Francis fight. That first Francis fight, I remember the post-fight press conference. I asked the first questions to Stipe. He was pissed that night. That dude was angry the whole time. And he refused to let Dana White put the belt around his waist. I remember that.
Yes.
Stipe was just he was not a happy camper because he thought the whole thing, the whole build was the Francis Ngannou show, and he was kind of the B side while he was the champion.
That's right. I'm remembering. I forgot about that whole him being irritated about all that stuff. Thank you for the reminder. It'll make the lead up to this one even more interesting for sure.
Yeah, I remember that whole week, Stipe and Dana. It felt like you were out to dinner with a couple, and you could tell they were fighting, but they were just acting like everything was good. But you're like, oh, you guys hate each other right now. Okay. Yeah, that's what it felt like the whole week between Dana and Stipe. I don't know if it's gotten any better, but I know exactly what you're talking about, Mike.
It seems like it's gotten a little bit better. Yeah, the relationship between Stipe and Dana and DC and Volkan got a little, we're getting a little testy too. Mm-hmm. Remember the media day at Fenway Park? Yeah. They almost got into it at the end of the media day.
Fun.
That was a fun card.
I know what Volk can't do. Volk can't beat Daniel Cormier. That's what he said before the fight. I was like, DC, your dad puns. I love it.
Yeah, he's good.
I think that was the birth of there's levels to this game.
Yeah,
there came from that. Yeah.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Ooh.
Where does Charles Oliveira end up in all this? So here's kind of my theory, and I'll let you guys chime in on this. It seemed just based on Dana's body language and what he was saying, you know, to John Anik and then again to the media. It seems like right now, Charles Oliveira in the Khabib sweepstakes is on top of the list. Like if Khabib were to come back, Oliveira is number one. Now, can these other four guys, depending on what they do next Saturday, can they leapfrog Charles Oliveira? That's kind of how I view it right now. Oliveira's performance against Khabib's bitter rival that he never got to fight puts him at the top of the list. Now, can any of these guys upend Charles Oliveira? That's how I see this. Laura, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you. I mean, they were very particular in bringing his name up every time this discussion happened. So it's clear that Khabib must have made a big enough deal out of how much respect he had for Charles Oliveira's last performance that that name is intentionally being injected, even though we keep talking about the four guys fighting in the two fights next Saturday. So I agree with you. There's something happened in the conversation where Khabib made it clear that he was very impressed by that performance and that Charles Oliveira needs to be in the conversation of whether Khabib comes back for another fight or not. And I think you're right. It could have been a conversation. I'm just speculating here, but it could have been a conversation of like, I would like to fight Charles Oliveira, but I want to wait and see, because if Conor does something, just blow me out of the water spectacular, then, you know, maybe that is the fight. I don't know. So, but I agree that that would be Oliveira versus Khabib would be pretty fascinating given, I mean, and it's so funny because just even as I say that, what Charles Oliveira has done for his career in the last couple months, in the last year, I'd say, is nothing short of incredible. Because there was a time not all that long ago where if you would have asked me to rate Charles Oliveira, I would have said phenomenal grappler, striking really coming along, and he's starting to put together some knockouts. But he always had specter of, you know, this question of does he quit in fights? Is the mentality, is the heart there to back up this incredible submission skill set and this growing striking skill set? And to hear, even to hear myself talk about how Khabib is eyeing him as the next greatest challenge is just so cool, because I love the idea that fighters are not, you're not stuck. You're not, you don't have to get pigeonholed a certain way. You can fight your way out of a reputation for X, Y, or Z if you put together enough performances that contradict that reputation or that conversation that has built up around you. Because I'm sure that we created that somewhat unfairly, but it's clear that he's just a different fighter these days.
Remember the days, Casey Lydon, and we've talked about this. Remember the days where Charles Oliveira would just go out and dominate a guy at 55, and then he would get on the mic and all he cared about was, give me one more chance to fight at featherweight again. Like, this is a guy who just realized that, hey, we're here. We're a 55er. We accept that. We're happy here. So my question for you is, one, do you agree with that Charles Oliveira, because I've been saying this for a while, I don't think Khabib's coming back, but if there's one guy who might entice him to come back, it is Charles Oliveira if he continues to rack up wins. But if Oliveira is on the top of this list, does this mean, in your opinion, that the fight that Dana White is trying to line up, because he mentioned Nate Diaz, booking him a fight at 55 that we'd all like, are you thinking Nate Diaz versus Justin Gaethje, since he seems to be the odd man out of this equation right now?
So you ask me, do I think Gaethje is going to face Nate Diaz? Is that...
If we are to believe that Oliveira is in the Khabib sweepstakes right now.
I think Oliveira is still... One more big win away, because away from Khabib coming out of retirement to face Oliveira. I think he still has to be one more win.
I don't mean to interrupt you. That's how I felt in my head. But then why? I just kept going back to like why was his name so intentionally? I mean, it's clear that Khabib really saw something, because I'm with you, Casey. If I would have written this narrative like, oh no, he needs one more of those
fights.
But it seems like Khabib really is kind of impressed by him right now.
Yeah, I mean, if Khabib, that'd be really interesting though, because I mean, of all the fighters, you mentioned Gaethje, Poirier, McGregor, Ferguson, whatever, Chandler. The one that sells the least amount of pay-per-views is Charles Oliveira.
For sure.
Just from a money standpoint. But if Khabib is good on money and all he cares about is competition and how he looks at how he ranks the fighters, not how we rank the fighters, and if he thinks Charles Oliveira is like, that guy can beat me, I want to face him. Yeah, if that's how Khabib feels. But again, are we hearing this from Khabib? I know we're kind of, everything's through other people. So
I wonder if, this is just me speculating 100%. I wonder if Khabib was like, I want to come back and I like the puzzle, the problem that Oliveira presents. But Dana was like, yeah, but the money is Conor. So why don't you wait and see if Conor does something that lights a fire in you? I wonder if the maybe, let's wait a little longer was kind of the push from Dana. Now, I'm just pure speculation on my part.
Well, Dana still has to sell the pay-per-view next week before he sells the Khabib versus anyone. So, I mean, I know it's a week-to-week thing with Dana in a lot of times as far as, you know, what he's promoting. Mm-hmm. And that's his job. He is a promoter. That's why as much as I thought the decision was whatever, we watched it. The fans watched it. We're talking about it. So Dana White's job as a promoter, he did perfectly. He's winning, you know, so the fact that we're talking all these things, yeah, that's all a win for the UFC and interest. Absolutely. And that's what they want.
Can I just say that the more I actually talk about this, the less I hate it.
Because it's your idea?
No, I just like
the Oliveira fight. Like,
nothing has changed.
Yeah, nothing's changed. We're exactly the same position.
But sometimes, and it's very cliche, sometimes if you just talk things out, it makes more sense. I still don't like it. Like, I've taken a step up from I hate this to I just don't like this at all. Like, I didn't like it. But I feel a little better than I did, you know, 5.5 hours ago when we got this news. We got this decision.
The non-news news, yeah.
Answer your question, in the short term, watch my 666. I think Charles Oliveira is a big piece to this puzzle, or could be speculative. You think Max is on to something when he said fighters should do less sparring in their training?
That's a fascinating question.
Yeah, what do you think, Laura?
I didn't mean to cut you off, Mike. I'm sorry. I was thinking a lot about that, and I think it's certainly not a blanket answer. I think it really depends on how far you are into your career. And clearly it works for Max Holloway. Can a younger guy, gal, get away with that? I don't think so. I think particularly the younger you are, the more that you need to understand the way your body reacts differently, the way your brain reacts differently when you're under an intense amount of pressure. Now, obviously there's degrees of sparring, right? Not all sparring is
created equal. Yeah.
And if you go to, you know, Vanderlei's gym, if you go to King's MMA, you're in for some hard sparring, right? And there are some gyms that take a slightly different approach. So, of course, I would agree that the old school, I was actually having this discussion after LFA last night, in fact, the old school days of like the day before your fight, let's get in the gym and let's just try to knock each other's heads off. And that's how we're going to prepare. Those days are long gone. That is 100% dumb and unnecessary.
What, the day before the fight, people were like, let's fight all out before the actual real fight. Oh, that's
telling these crazy stories about like Shogun. And I can't remember who else it was, but he was telling these crazy, like really old school Pride Day stories of like, oh man, yeah. Like right before they went out, people, you know, sparring so hard in the warm up that they're almost getting, you know, knocked out back in the day. So obviously that's dumb, but I think it has to be a case by case basis. Clearly it works for Max Holloway, but Max Holloway, as we know, is a special guy. It's not going to work for everybody. And I think part of it comes down to, are you someone who needs an on switch, or are you someone who doesn't have to find the switch? I obviously had a very short career. So I'm on the side of, you know, being green, and like, I needed more experience dealing with that level of pressure and finding my on switch so that I could do that in a fight. Max knows himself. So I'm kind of giving a wishy-washy answer, but I don't think it's for everybody. Some people need to spar. You just have to spar smart.
I think spar smart is the answer. Remember, and Max has been kind of, very secretive about this, but remember the whole situation when he was, I forgot who it was. He was fighting Ortega originally. And the week of, he had those, I guess, remember those faintings, or he was just dizzy.
Yes.
And it wasn't from the weight cut yet. It was actually just, they had, basically kind of sounded like he had some concussion issues. And those concussion issues mm-hmm. were coming from sparring. And it was carrying over mm-hmm. to a fight week. And I think he just learned his lesson from that. And if you remember too, when Max fought Frankie Edgar and went to the decision, and Max actually said in the post fight press conference, he said, I didn't want to go all out with Frankie in a sense that I wanted to play it safe. I didn't want to take any damage. And so that fight was kind of boring in a sense. It wasn't like as crazy as this fight was, but Max admitted I fought safe. I wanted to just get in and out of there with no damage. And I think Max is realizing that. I think he has children. I think he has a kid. When he has a kid, he talked about having one. He wants more kids. I think he just recently got married and stuff, mm-hmm. or his fiance. So I think Max just sees there's life after fighting. And if he's going to take that brain trauma, he's going to make sure he gets paid for it.
Go ahead.
I just think he's at that point in his career where he's got all the skills. Now it's just, he has to get his body in shape and the timing right, but there's no need to punch in a sense to get ready for a fight at his level.
Yeah. You have to know that there is a life after fighting. And I know that Dana always gets so much shit for saying that fighting's not a career because you can take it one way. What he means when he says that, but I think that this topic is what he's talking about. Like, the fighting is a young man's sport, and you have to enter it knowing that you will not be doing your life. It means that you're going to have, God willing, 30, 40, 50 years after you're done fighting. And what is that chunk of your life going to look like? And I recently, I'm not going to say who it is because I don't want to, offend anybody, but there's a fighter that's been around the block for a while, and he's kind of got that style where he gets hit a lot. And I was having a conversation with him. I hadn't talked to him in a few years, and I was like, as soon as he started talking to me, I was alarmed by his rate of speech, and like, I don't know, just the way he was having trouble finding things that we were discussing and like couldn't, I don't know. It reminded me of the article that we referenced, at the top of the show. And it broke my heart because it made me think like this guy has not maybe fully, you can say that, of course, your career's going to end at some point, but like there's knowing it. And then there's, man, knowing it and changing how you approach your career now to set yourself up for success later. And I think Max is clearly a guy who gets it and has done that. And I hope more fighters see that you don't have to sacrifice yourself for the rest of your life for a couple of years of glory, even though a lot of them choose to do that.
Yeah, well said. And seeing Max Holloway, especially like these days, 2020, 2021, I wonder if Demetrius Johnson was just like so ahead of his time. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like a lot of things that Max Holloway has perfected at this point in his career, DJ was doing for years before that and wasn't mm-hmm. getting the same attention that Max is getting right now from like the video gaming, the way he just like gets better, the cool, calm collectedness mm-hmm. that he is in the octagon. Like, if DJ had a... If DJ had like a 50-43 win over somebody and defended the flyweight title, you would not be getting the same attention that Max Holloway is getting right now. I just think Max is such a cool customer, and the UFC did such a great job like promoting him over the years. And plus, Max is just such a nice guy. I don't know. I just feel like DJ was ahead of his time, and Max is just the same guy. It's not like he was copying DJ, but I feel like the pieces that DJ presented, Max has just taken and ran with it.
Yeah, I can see that. I think Max has a penchant for some great one-liners, which always helps to be, DJ was a personal guy, but I don't know. There's something special. When Max opens his mouth, it's either going to be funny or insightful or phrased in a certain way that's just sort of delightful. He's an interesting guy to listen to all the time.
Yeah, Max is fortunate in the sense that he's just one of those personalities, and he's always had it. If you look at his old interviews, even before he was a pro, I think there was an interview as an amateur, like when he still has bleach blonde hair and he looks like 12 years old, but he's still the same guy.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you still see that same Max Holloway in there. So yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, and like even the DJ thing, I think we've all talked to DJ, but then sometimes when the cameras are on, then it's maybe a slightly different DJ, but
yeah,
sometimes you want, it's like, DJ, where's that guy that I talked to you in private? Give me 30% of that.
Sometimes I think people just feel like, and it's hard, you know, being a fan, how hard it is to just be normal, you know, even though there's this camera in here, just be normal, you know, it's harder than it sounds.
Okay.
It is what it is.
That's what he said. that's all right. One more question before we let everyone take a nap.
What are you most looking forward to for Wednesday's card? Ooh. Oh, it's all right. I want to preface this by saying that I know if you compare it to today's card and you compare it to 257, it's not as deep, to be friendly about it. But if you really look at some of the matchups on Wednesday's card, there's some bangers on there. There are some really solid fights. Tyson Nam versus Matt Schnell is ridiculous. That is a ridiculous fight. I cannot wait for that one. So if we're going under the radar, that is my pick. Laura, what is yours?
I'll be perfectly honest with you, between calling fights for the LFA and then watching tonight, I have not even looked at Wednesday's card other than the main event. So I'll just go there. I genuinely think, you know, I wanted to see the Ben Edwards, Khamzat Chimaev fight. I cannot wait for that fight because Leon is such a perpetually underrated, underhyped individual, and Khamzat, I think, still has a lot to prove in my eyes, but that's not on this card, so I will continue. I will stop talking about that. I think Magny Chiesa is a really intriguing matchup, and they're both long, rangy guys. They're sort of similar in a sense, and I think that this is, you know, a real opportunity for Chiesa to come out and steal the spotlight. But man, Neil Magny has looked next level in his last couple times out, and I'm excited for that one. I think that one's going to be, I hope they're on the canvas a lot because I want to, you know, geek out over some intriguing grappling exchanges, but we'll see. It'll be a good one.
Laura,
what do you think, Casey?
Oh, actually, there's a fighter debuting on Wednesday's card named Victoria Laredo. Do you remember her from Invicta?
Oh, Leonardo?
Leonardo.
Yeah, Victoria Leonardo. Yeah.
Yeah. So she
that'll be fun.
Tell us a little about. I saw that she's fought in Victor, but I don't remember her. Do you?
Yeah. Oh no, she's had some real fun ones, and she won her contract on the Contender Series this last season. Now she's solid everywhere. She's predominantly a striker, but has excellent grappling awareness, and I think has really worked on honing that. Her grappling has, particularly her control grappling, like she's really good at getting on top now and maintaining that top position, but she could throw hands. She's just a solid, durable striker that has had enough time in Invicta to really develop a well-rounded skill set. I think sometimes some of the female fighters can get rushed into the UFC a little bit more than the guys do. And then we end up with these divisions where it's like the queen of the division and sort of everybody else is, you know, like anybody could beat anybody on any given day. And I think Victoria, given her experience in Invicta, and what I saw in the Contender Series, has a real shot at making a dent and being ranked in that division sooner rather than later. But we'll see. She'll be a fun one to watch for sure.
You know, I'm excited to see eventually in the UFC or whatever other organization, maybe Invicta. Cool. I love Erin Blanchfield.
Yes.
I think she's so good.
How could you not love Erin?
Blanchfield's amazing. Yeah, so I'm excited about seeing what's on. Sorry, I got in the whole fight finder topology. I mean,
for half a second.
Yeah.
After last night, because I'll admit, like a lot of times I get very myopic about the UFC and Contender Series because I got to really wrap my brain around those things. After being exposed to Loveth Young on the LFA last night, holy moly. That girl is going to be problems.
What's her name? Tell me more.
For somebody in strawweight. Her name is Loveth Young, and she's the Nigerian Terminator. And guys, gals, if you're watching this, go look this lady up. She's got as close to a walk-off knockout as you're going to get at the strawweight division. She went out there and absolutely dominated Kelly D'Angelo last night. I know that we're supposed to be talking about UFC stuff, so I'll quit rambling now. But Loveth Young, look her up.
Loveth Young. All right.
Yeah, another good prospect on that card who won last night and got a finish, Michael Stack. I'm a fan of that kid. I think he's going to be really good. Michael Stack is a super young guy. His story about how he got into the sport is great. We'll let him tell that story when he gets closer. If he should be on the Contender Series this summer for sure. But if you want a good Victoria Leonardo fight to watch, Invicta 36, 2019, Stephanie Geltmacher. Yeah. Oh my God, those two beat the brakes off of each other. That fight was awesome. That's a fun one.
Okay, last thing on non-UFC fighters, prospects. You know my new favorite fighter actually is? I hope you remember Hope Chase, the Invicta fighter.
Yes.
She's awesome.
She's wild.
I love Hope Chase.
She is wild. She is... I don't know who to compare her to.
It's maybe maybe a young Diego Sanchez. Kind of like she has that kind of vibe. She has that.
I can see that. Yes, that's such a good analogy, Casey. That's so perfect. She is. She, and I mean this like with all due respect.
Yeah,
very charming way. We need these people. She has to screw loose, and I freaking love it. And I'm here for it. She called out. Every woman that has ever fought in Invicta, and then she's running through the UFC, and she's a flyweight, right? Or
she's flyweight. Yeah, 22 years old. Flyweight. Yeah,
she's calling out Chris Cyborg. I mean, she meant it, right? Like,
yeah,
she's not.
You see, you see that in her eyes, like, oh, she ain't. Like, we're kind of laughing. We're kind of like, ha ha ha. We're like, oh wait, she's very serious, and I love that.
I got a lot of, I would say I got caught, but I think a lot of people felt for me in that interview because I think you could see me like trying to stifle a laugh. I wasn't laughing at her like, oh, how preposterous. Like she was so intense. She's like, I'm going to call out Chris Cyborg. I'm going to call out Amanda Nunes. And I was just like, oh my God, this woman. Wow. I want half of what you're taking. I want half of that.
We were just talking about how some fighters, like when they're on camera, they give us like 50% of their personality. When she's on camera, I feel like she gives 200%. Like, she's just like, whatever she is, when the camera turns on, it's just, ugh.
She's wild. Yeah. She is absolutely wild, and I love it. And she loves Jesus so much, and she will bring that up as well, which makes for another fascinating interview.
Live your life, Hope Chase. Live your life.
God was cornering her in that fight, and I'm not mocking that. I grew up that way, so I'm not making fun of it, but like, she wears it on her sleeve, and so it's very Diego Sanchez. Very Diego Sanchez.
Who's I want to see Hope Chase versus what's her name? Trains with like the Diaz brothers or in Stockton with Chelsea Chandler. That's the fight to make. That's the fight.
That's, I want that girl, and I always hate saying this because I'm sure it pisses Shannon off, but I want big things for these women. So I want Chelsea Chandler in the UFC tomorrow. That girl's attitude, she's my favorite. She's my favorite because she is like, when she fought, now I'm going to forget her name, but the woman from LA who like weighed in a fur coat and was the sunglasses and like had the whole thing, beautiful girl. And Chelsea just comes out there and is just like, you know, Diaz, just dripping Diaz and beat the brakes off of her. Anyway, enough of women's MMA.
Women.
Why are we talking about women?
Let's talk about some bros, some dudes. Got some brewskis, yeah.
Yes.
Hey, listen, who had the fight of the year last year? Not the men. Exactly. The women had the fight of the year last year.
Exactly. I love seeing that.
And there were two men that fought after those women. They just pity-patted for 25 minutes. Come on.
Yep. Girls, bring it. There you have it. There's always been like a little chip on our shoulder about being in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we have waxed poetically on UFC Fight Island 7, the UFC's debut on ABC. We have discussed pretty much everything in the world of MMA, from the decision to Holloway's win over Cater to even women's MMA. We got through it all. Prospect Watch, we did it all. So,
music.
Of course, music. It's wonderful, right?
I can't.
Face the pain, Laura Sanko, face the pain.
I'm trying to close the show. I can't.
We're so relaxed right now. So, Laura, thank you so much for joining us. You're the best. Anything else you want to get off your chest before you say goodbye?
No, I just need to go sleep. This was a lot of fun. Thank you, guys. And this theme is just, I'm so here for it. I love it. Thank you, guys.
There you go. So for Laura Sanko, for Casey Lydon, I am Mike Heck. Thank you for watching. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.